I always listen, don't you?
Yeah, you'd be mad not to.
There's too much choice and not enough guidance, and they give you that in abundance. Johnny and Claire on 5 Live Drive. We are back tomorrow at the same time. Coming up, it's 5 Live Sport Monday Night Club. Stay tuned.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News at 7 o'clock. This is Claire Ronacres. US media is reporting that Israel is about to launch a limited ground incursion into Lebanon. An unnamed American official has been quoted saying the cross-border operation could start in the coming hours. Hezbollah has vowed to keep fighting Israel and says it's ready to face any ground operation. Our correspondent John Donison, who's in Jerusalem, has more details.
I think what's crucial, though, is the scale and the scope of it. So this might be quite limited initially. It might be happening in certain sectors just over the border. They might not push in that far. I don't think we should be expecting thousands of troops to be marching across the whole border and pushing deep into Lebanon. I think it could be quite incremental.
The UK's top civil servant, Simon Case, has announced he'll step down as Cabinet Secretary at the end of the year on health grounds. In a statement, he said while the spirit remained willing, the body was not. Our politics correspondent, Harry Farley, reports.
Simon Case was appointed Cabinet Secretary by Boris Johnson in 2020. In a message to colleagues this afternoon, Mr. Case said in that time it had been an honour to serve 2 sovereigns, 4 prime ministers and more than 120 cabinet ministers. In January, Mr. Case returned to work after 2 months off sick, and he said he had been undergoing medical treatment for a neurological condition over the last 18 months. There have been reports of recent tensions between Mr. Case and Sue Gray, the Prime Minister's Chief of Staff. But in his letter, he dismissed the idea, saying it was a shame to have to spell out that his decision was solely to do with his health and nothing else.
Police have released the name of an 8-year-old boy who died after a shooting at a farm in Cumbria at the weekend. Jay Cartmel had suffered serious head injuries in the incident, which happened near Warkop on Saturday. More than 100 years of traditional steelmaking in Port Talbot has come to an end with the closure of the last coal-fired blast furnace. The owner, Tata, says it's committed to replacing the old furnace at the UK's biggest steelworks with a greener one that can only recycle steel. Around 2,500 jobs are at risk. Alan Davis represents steelworkers for the community union.
This is a bad, bad day for Port Talbot. The only place left with blast furnaces now is Scunthorpe. And that's on the edge as well. At the end of the day, the companies that own them are the ones that say what they want to do, and we try and fight it, and we're just trying to make light of a bad day.
And members of the largest education union in the UK have voted to accept the government's 5.5% pay rise for teachers in England. The National Education Union said 95% of members who responded voted to accept the pay offer for this financial year. The weather, cloud and heavy rain for central and eastern areas of England and Wales, largely dry elsewhere. BBC News, it's 3 minutes past seven.
If you love your pop, this is right up your street.
Pop Top 10 with Scott and Rylan.
We've picked some of the most hotly contested questions of all time and decided to settle them once and for all with the help of some special guests.
We're taking it very seriously.
I can't let things like that slide on this show.
No, come on!
What are you on about?
Don't put words into my mouth.
I won't, darling. You're spatting them yourself.
Search Pop Top 10 to listen on BBC Sounds.
This is 5 Live Sport.
The Monday Night Club with Mark Chapman.
Listen on BBC Sounds.
Evening 5 Live Cricket from 9 o'clock tonight. Monday Night Club on the way. I'm sure you can guess what we're going to start with. But we'll also talk about Cole Palmer, the Manchester City development squad production line, Brentford's streak of scoring goals as well. Plenty of live football this week. Tuesday, Arsenal, Paris Saint-Germain. Wednesday, Aston Villa, Bayern. Thursday, Porto, Manchester United. And tonight, there's Premier League action as well. We'll be across this throughout the course of the evening. Bournemouth against Southampton. Chris Wise has the team news.
Thanks, Chappers. Yeah, and you've avoided the temptation to call it a South Coast derby as well.
It's not a derby.
It's definitely not. It's the most watered-down version of that, I think. Geographically close, intensity not there. But what there is an intense need for points tonight for Bournemouth. three changes this evening from that defeat to Liverpool. Adam Smith captains the team. He's in for Araujo at right back. Senesi returns for Dean Housen. And Dango Ouattara gets a rare start as well, with Justin Kluivert dropping to the bench. Andoni Iraola, the Bournemouth head coach, he won't be on the touchline tonight. He is serving a one-match touchline ban for three yellow cards to Southampton. They're in the relegation zone, but they get out of it tonight with a win, which would be their first of the season. Two changes from that draw with Ipswich, which was their first Premier League point. The Chelsea loanee Leslie Ugochukwu comes in for Adam Lallana. Maxwell Cornet is starting his first Premier League game for Southampton tonight. Cameron Archer making way. Two goals Southampton have scored this season, Chappers, and I think the Saints team selection tonight is really interesting because there is no natural number nine in that 11, so that's a potential talking point as the night goes on. 8 o'clock kickoff here.
Thank you, Chris. Comes to something when the manager's the first suspension of the season, doesn't it, Connor? Not a big tough centre-half.
I know, yeah. Three bookings already.
Welcome to the Monday Night Club. Connor Cody here alongside Chris Sutton and Rory Smith, and also a big welcome to you if you are a new listener who reads Live the Dales magazine. Rory, a big feature in that magazine over the last week, big profile piece, selling the Monday Night Club, weren't you?
Yeah, very much so. You know, to the good people of all the Dales, Airedale, Wharfdale, Nidderdale, possibly Cravendale. I can't remember if that's one of them. A lot of people in the Dales. A lot of you know potential audience there.
But you were sort
just
of
my bit.
Self-styled star of the Monday Night Club. That's kind of what the feature was billed as. Really.
Well, I think there's
the favourite. Yeah, the favourite member of the Monday Night Club, according to the author.
Well, that's not on me, is it? Some people will be drawn to Chris's kind of. I'm not quite sure why anyone would be drawn to Chris, but yeah.
Some people will tolerate
my presence. Yeah.
I've seen the piece, actually. It says one of the best voices on sport. Is that the way you described yourself, or is that the way they described you?
That is how I introduce myself to everyone. Yeah. Just in conversation. I say at the petrol station.
So you can find that interview in Live the Dales magazine, the Premier Lifestyle Guide to Skipton, Ilkley, Ripon, Harrogate and the Dales. And the reason our attention was drawn to it is because John Murray was flicking through it looking for some ideas for his bathroom. And that's how I found out about it. Anyhow, so Connor, Chris, and the best voice on sport, Rory Smith, with us over the course of the next 2 hours. MNC@bbc.co.uk. If you want to email us, you can watch us on the iPlayer or via the BBC Sport website as well. Only one place to start, obviously. Manchester United, Eric Ten Hag, the club, are putting out all the noises that he will remain in charge for this week's games. They're away to Porto and they're away to Aston Villa. Both of those matches live on 5 Live. Can't wait for them. Anything new to say on this, voice of sport?
I think it's probably right that I go first, yeah.
Absolutely. We all want to know what you've got to say.
No, there is nothing new to say on Man United and Erik ten Hag. They have got themselves into, I mean, maybe not an unprecedented situation, but a really remarkable one where they, as everyone knows, interviewed him for his own job in the summer, gave him a new 3-year contract, and are now exactly where they were last season. And yeah, I mean, they got a point at Palace, and that was probably a creditable result. A little bit disappointing, played quite well. But what we saw against Spurs yesterday was, that's not the first time that's happened. It's not the last time it will happen if Ten Hag's in charge. There's no sign of progress, no sign of a plan. I feel quite sorry for him. He seems like a nice man. And it's not, it's very hard to take any sort of pleasure in watching him kind of slowly dwindle away. But I don't understand how United have got themselves in this position.
Aside from the human side of things, and he does appear, you know, when you interview him, he does appear a very nice man, a very pleasant man, and amenable, certainly compared to some of his predecessors in the last decade. But what makes you feel sorry for him?
I think having what must be a professional disappointment be dragged out so endlessly to the point where, like, people who are being paid to talk about football on the radio can't really talk about it anymore, because we've said it all before, must be humiliating and agonizing. And yeah, I think on a human level, it's really hard not to feel sorry for him. He has not fulfilled what he was meant to do at Manchester United. It is hard, really hard to see a way in which it all ends okay. And he gets the club back to where the club wants to be, and he gets what he wants from the job. And in the meantime, he seems destined to just, through a mixture of the club's indecision and his own understandable self-belief, to have his one of the greatest disappointments of his career played out publicly maybe not every single week, but kind of once every 3 weeks. Man United are back in crisis. It feels kind of cringy.
I think for me, what Rory's saying is, and I agree with him as well, is when you become Man United boss, it comes with becoming Man United boss. These are the things that people talk about. It's probably the biggest job in English football, if we're talking about Manchester United and the size of the football club. And I think it comes with it. I think me playing football and being in the game, every player speaks about Manchester United and what goes on with them on the weekend. And I think Rory's right. Every week we kind of sit here, don't we, and speak about it. And me and you, Chap, have spoke before we come on about kind of the way they're playing and how they're doing it. And that's just natural because it's Manchester United, and that's what comes with being Manchester United manager. So I think he'll know that. But at the same time, I understand what Rory's saying, because we seem to be here every single week with him, don't we?
And whilst you can understand the Rory's, as I say, feeling sorry for him on a human level, the majority of this is his responsibility, isn't it, Chris? When you look at the 11, the subs, I think out of the whole of the starting 11 and the bench, that only Dalot, Bruno Fernandes, Marcus Rashford and Victor Lindelof were not brought in or brought through by him.
So this is his third season, £600 million later. And I actually don't think it was necessarily the 3-0 scoreline. It was how the whole game panned out, really, and how... And I think we at the start of this season, you could put Tottenham and Manchester United into a similar category as such in terms of where we thought that they may both finish. But Tottenham, Postecoglou's been in a season less. You can see what they're trying to do. Whether you agree with everything which Ange Postecoglou does in terms of the way that he sets his team up, they do have an identity. We've spoken about this many, many times about Manchester United under Erik ten Hag. The lack of identity. But I don't think this is on Ten Hag now. I think this is on Ineos. Ineos must be... look, they all must be talking to each other at the top of the club.
You would hope so.
Rory made the point about the summer. You know, they were actively looking for somebody else. So it's not that they really rated Ten Hag as such. He was just... He won the FA Cup and he was just okay. So they didn't rate him highly enough. So at this moment in time, I think if we were to say, look forward 3 months, do we see, honestly, this Manchester United team improving under Ten Hag based on what he has spent and what he has achieved, which you can argue a couple of cups. I don't think Manchester United, Mark, should be viewed by people as a cup team. That's never been the impression since I was playing.
And let's deal with that. Let's deal with the football that they are playing, and then come back to the hierarchy in Ineos and them talking to each other, and what their plan may or may not be. Because the majority of our sort of 15 minutes outside talking to each other, Connor, was on coaching, style of play, how teams progress, what most teams are trying to do in the Premier League, certainly the top teams, and how Manchester United, in many ways, seem like a case all on their own, completely different to half of what's going on elsewhere.
Yeah, and I think that's probably where it's gone a little bit, missing a little bit. And also with other clubs kind of improving and getting better and bringing coaches in who were real tacticians, and the detail and level of the coaching is through the roof. Now, we were speaking outside, Chab, about kind of Enzo, and I was lucky enough to work under him last year, now being at Chelsea. And I experienced a coach with a level of detail that I've never seen before. And now he's gone on to Chelsea, and we can see now Chelsea starting to play certain styles. And when we think of the top teams of Manchester City, Arsenal, Liverpool at this moment in time, who are winning games, and we look at the level of coaches there and the detail now, I can't imagine that Erik ten Hag's not doing that, but we're seeing something different kind of on the pitch when we watch Manchester United. But I will always, and I think over the years, we've always put Manchester United in that bracket of them teams. I think you'd be silly not to because of the size of the football club and what they've done over the years. But I just think with where other clubs are now, have they overtaken Manchester United? Of course, yeah, because they're playing some fantastic football. But when you speak about coaches, the level of detail that them coaches produce, and again, I just speak off experience of having Enzo last year and experiencing being with Enzo, it's through the roof. And I don't know, I've not been in the Man United camp, I've not spoke to anyone there whether they're doing that.
But that's in and out of possession, isn't it? And when you watch Manchester United, there are huge swathes of space, whether they have the ball or don't have the ball.
It's everything, in and out of possession. It's detail of your pass. It's passing to the right foot. It's passing to the foot that your teammate can then take a step forward. It's taking players out the game. It's absolutely every aspect of the game that these managers cover. And like I said, it's just from experience of myself last year and playing under Enzo and seeing obviously what he's doing this year of formations and creating a box in midfield and connecting the box in midfield, all this sort of stuff he brought. And I can imagine that them top managers at them top clubs at this moment in time are very similar.
Do you think that's the most damning thing, Chris?
Yeah, I do, because we're, you know, he's into his third season now. It's not like he's just rocked up and taken over. I mean, you know, in his early days, remember him sitting at Brentford and United getting smashed 4-0 and really feeling sorry for him then. But this is, you know, the money which he spent to assemble this team, you would expect them to have a style of play, patterns of play. You would expect them to be in sync defensively in terms of the way that they press, and they are anything but. And the difference in the two teams yesterday, there was an enormous gulf. But you know, the players do have to take responsibility as well in this. But this is a group which Ten Hag has assembled.
But so what Connor said, I think, is really interesting. That so it may well be that like Maresca
that comes
is,
from the voice of sport. That
it's always nice, crazy, that isn't it, Chaff?
Put that on your CV. Tom.
Like, we won't do this all night. As funny as it is to us, it'll get wearing for everybody else. But go
the so like if even if we assume that like maybe Maresca goes into a little bit more detail than Ten Hag or has better ideas than Ten Hag, which is perfectly possible. Ten Hag will do all that stuff. There's no way that he's coached at Ajax and coaching at Man United where he's got. It's not like he's just in a room on his own with the players. Like there's all of his assistants, there's Jason Wilcott, and there's all this sort of expertise around him.
But what is happening then?
Well, that's what I mean. Why do United look so amorphous, so devoid of any sort of identity after, as Chris says, 3 years? Is it that Ten Hag's ideas are bad? Is it that the players don't listen? Is it that the training's like not good enough so that they're effectively forgetting what they're meant to be doing on the pitch as players? Where does that come from?
I think sometimes you can look too much into it. I think when you're on a training pitch, I agree. I think Erik ten Hag will have his way of working and he'll have his ideas and his ways of doing it. And sometimes there's a whole host of things. Players might sit there and speaking from a player point of view and speaking to a lot of players in the game and playing within the game, players are so open to new ideas these days. They want detail. They want you to give you as much detail as possible because you want to win games and you understand as a football player, especially in the Premier League, how hard it is to win games. And especially being at Manchester United, you want to keep up with them top teams. You have to keep up with them top teams. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to play for Manchester United. So whatever it is, the training within the place, whether they're not taking his ideas on board, whether the players are stood there thinking, I don't think this is right, I don't think this is going to work, that might be what they're actually thinking. We don't know what's going on, but there's something kind of not there. Because again, we mentioned Tottenham because we're just going off the game on the weekend. The patterns that they show and the way that they play with fullbacks, both fullbacks coming inside, by the way, Maddison having a little bit of a free roll, getting the ball, coming, getting it off the back force, playing in between the lines, you can tell that that's been worked on from day one with Postecoglou. You can see it an absolute mile off. So there's a whole host of things it could be, but it just doesn't seem to be resonating on the pitch at the minute.
I think it's really interesting, and I agree with that, the fact whether the players aren't actually buying into it. I'm absolutely convinced in the way that Tottenham play, and I know from Postecoglou teams that he insists that players are brave on the ball. And the way that Manchester United started yesterday and were careless at the back, I bet Ten Hag, the instruction would have been to carry on having the confidence to play. And I bet they're the patterns which he's worked on in training. But at that stage, they just went under and they played with real fear, and Tottenham sensed it and they swarmed all over them. It's just you would expect more from a team which, you know, you look at the cost of the players, the money spent, Ugarte coming in, and it was difficult for him. Really difficult. I thought he struggled.
Why does every Manchester United player make their debut and then it's described as it's difficult for them?
Well, because genuinely. Yeah, no, because if you're going into you're moving to a club which has a great history and a great expectation, which there is at Manchester United, then, you know, you want to hit the ground running. But if you're going into a team which isn't quite in sync and hasn't been in sync for a while, this is a team who finished a miserable eighth in the Premier League last season and who struggled. There was a lack of identity. It's not an easy thing to go into. And, you flick a switch and everything suddenly changes. It's difficult. So, it was difficult for him, but you can't say that he improved the team. It could be a slog for him this season.
If you look
until things change.
If you look at the top eight, Rory, you could argue they all have a tactical identity. And you could add that you know how they're going to play and how drilled they are. And I include Fulham on that, who we're going to talk about a little bit later on what Marco Silva has done there. Liverpool, City, Arsenal, Chelsea, Villa, Fulham, Newcastle, Tottenham. All actually with the kind of coaches that Connor has talked about.
Yeah, but it's not just the top six, it's not just the top nine. Go through the table. Brighton have an identity. It didn't work at the weekend, but Brighton are Brighton. They are Brighton regardless of who the manager is, to be honest. There are tweaks, but the basic principles remain the same. Forest are starting to look like a Nuno team. Brentford, we know, they are going to score within 30 seconds. That's Brentford style. Bournemouth are an Iraola team.
Southampton.
Sort of high pressing. Southampton are very much Russell Martin's sort of creation. West Ham, okay, maybe not. And Everton have a style. Leicester have a style. It's changing because obviously the manager changed in the summer, so maybe not quite as bedded in as some of the others. Palace have a style under Glasner, which, as we talked about last season, took about 10 minutes to introduce. Southampton have a style, and I think Wolves have a style as well. I mean, there's maybe two clubs in the Premier League who, if you were asked to sort of sum up how they play, you're not quite sure, and that's Man United and West Ham.
Yeah, it's difficult to disagree, isn't it?
It's very difficult to disagree, and I think this is, we mentioned before about the way the Premier League's going and having to keep up with the big teams and having to keep up with how hard the Premier League is as players, as coaches, as football clubs. I think that's the biggest thing, the football clubs trying to keep up with it. And I was listening to Chris speak before, and when we spoke about styles of play, I think the hardest thing from being in the Premier League and playing the Premier League now is giving the opposition space. I think if you give the opposition space, I think they can kill you. I really do. I think you find it really tough against them. So you've got to be compact. You've got to be together. Whether that's you're now a defensive team, an attacking team. And I think just Man United just seem a little bit in the middle. We mentioned about fullbacks coming inside and that being the thing at this moment in time. I see Man United's fullbacks coming inside, but there's still loads of space. So is there an in-between about it? Are they doing it at the right time? Are they doing it at the wrong time? Are they going in there because it's a thing, or are they going in there to affect the opposition? And then all of a sudden there seems to be loads of space. So, yeah, it just seems a little bit in between, but I think you're exactly right. You go through the whole of the Premier League and I think you've got to have a style. You've got to sign a certain profile of player, a certain type of player to give you that style, to give you a chance to go and win games in the Premier League because it's that tough.
Connor, is that a confidence thing? Is it that Man United in training during the week are working on, right, let's invert the fullbacks. Everyone does it now. Let's bring the fullbacks inside. Mm. That's how we'll kind of restrict space and then we'll sort of sprint from there. Mm. But because they've had so many bad results in the last 2 years, that as soon as something goes against them, they start basically second-guessing themselves. And I, obviously never having been a Premier League footballer, but that self-doubt will do for you in an instant in the Premier League. Just as soon as the opposition sense it, you're done.
Yeah, 100%. I actually love the idea of fullbacks coming inside, Rory. I love what it brings. But the idea of fullbacks inside, from what I learnt last year from playing that system, is to create overloads in the middle of the pitch, to have more players in the middle of the pitch than the opposition, to get them in the right areas. But you've got to find the ball at the right time. And a big thing for me with fullbacks coming inside, you've got to make passes to get them on the ball at the right time, because fullbacks aren't used to being in the middle of the pitch. They need to be in the middle of the pitch with time and space. Now, you don't get much of that, especially in the Premier League. So if you can make passes to them, find them when they have that time and space. Are they finding them too quickly, which means the ball's getting turned over quicker and the spacing behind the teams can counter? We don't really know. We don't really know what the answer is. But they will be working on it in the week. And it's just taking it into a game is a totally different matter.
It's everything though, isn't it? Because you have to put everything into the mix. It is a confidence thing, but it has to be a coaching thing. Then it has to be a recruitment thing, and the money which they've spent. I mean, the simple principles which teams work on is our build up play better than the opposition's press? And do you know what? Tottenham are very good the way that they press. You know they're going to be aggressive. But I think it is reasonable to expect this far in for Erik ten Hag that his Manchester United team most weeks should be superior to most teams in the Premier League, and yet they are not.
I mean, Christian Romero yesterday, Rory, played a pass in the first half between the lines under a bit of pressure that probably took out four Manchester United players that I'm not sure I've seen a United defender play in the last 5 years. Is that confident?
That's a manager.
But it's a mixture, isn't it?
That's the manager. That's what
it's
that is.
It's a mixture of confidence and knowing what you're supposed to be doing and where your teammates are going to be at any given moment. So Romero will know that in that situation, and look, this hasn't necessarily been the perfect start to a season for Postecoglou, and we shouldn't forget that I think 2 weeks ago we were querying kind of Ange's model.
Yeah, Chris.
No, you were.
Chris, we should make it clear that Chris Sutton has never criticised Ange Postecoglou and never will.
No.
But it's knowing where your team is likely to be. It's knowing what your patterns of play are. You actually see a lot more of that at the moment, I think, in the Premier League. That's changed in the last couple of years. Defenders and defensive midfielders playing those zipped balls in between the lines. There's a lot more risky passing now than I think in those areas, that sort of like inside your own half, trying to break through the lines, and I think you saw a couple of years ago. But United can't do it because there's no confidence in the system, because the system isn't as well embedded as it is at Spurs, because the identity's not as clear. That's how it all joins up. And the one thing I'd maybe take issue with is that while the performance itself is on Ten Hag, that's the manager's job, the chaos and the consequences are completely on Ineos, because they must have known in the summer that they, not only were they undermining their manager, but they were sticking with a guy whose first two seasons didn't really suggest he warranted a third, to be perfectly honest. Man United finished eighth in the Premier League last season. And they've created this sort of situation where as soon as United hit a bad run of form, there were going to be questions over his future. So the uncertainty around the club, which must affect the players, that's on the ownership. That's not on Ten Hag.
Do you mean uncertainty on Ten Hag? Do you mean the fact that there are a lot of redundancies? Are you talking purely football side?
No, all of it. So the off-the-field redundancies are kind of separate, I guess. But yeah, that won't help the morale at the club. But if you're a player there, presumably you're thinking, well, there's half a chance this guy's not in charge in a week's time, because we've got two difficult games, then an international break. And even if he is in charge in a week's time, we'll give it 3 weeks and his job will be under threat again. And you're also thinking that might mean a new manager, which might mean I'm not here for very long either. How does Manuel Ugarte know how long his Man United career is going to last?
According to the New York Times, Manchester United's chief exec Omar Berada said the club were aiming to win the Premier League by 2028 as part of Project 150. That would be 150 years since the club was formed. So on the basis that we believe the New York Times, Rory, on that story, is that possible? How do they do that?
It's not my story. I should make that clear. But it's definitely possible. Yeah.
Is it credible in the story?
it must be. Yeah, it's definitely possible that United win the Premier League.
If you backpedal much more, you'll be out of that door behind you and down your stairs.
We're looking for a job at Liverdale. it's definitely possible that United win the Premier League before 2028, just because they are, as Connor said, they're such a big club and they're so rich. It is possible. It's very hard to see a pathway between, like, September the 30th, 2024 and May the 30th, 2028 and think, oh yeah, that ends with Man United being champions. But if they spend enough money and they hire a visionary manager, then yeah, it's possible. I would suggest it's quite unlikely. Adam, which means you're looking at 15 years with no titles for Manchester United.
Adam sent us an email, mnc@bbc.co.uk. Is the reason he asks that Ten Hag hasn't been sacked is because there are no viable managers to take over at this moment? Or is it because the owners don't want to be seen as going back on their word, Chris?
Both of those things, probably. I think the owners, yeah, they're going to get egg on the face, so they might as well get on with it and get the egg on the face for, you know, for giving him a new deal. They had faith in him. And in a short space of time, it's unraveled. It's not going to happen under Ten Hag. I think that was pretty evident. It's who's out there, at this moment in time, who's better. And, you know, names which have popped up. Gareth Southgate's name has popped up, hasn't it? Graham Potter, Thomas Tuchel's about, but I think he's had his time, in fairness, Ten Hag. He's had his opportunity. You can't spend 600 million and still play utter dross, which is what Manchester United do. This is just going to rumble on and rumble on. Manchester United are not a top quality team, and until they get a top quality coach in, they are not going to improve. And the chance, or this plan, which you talk about winning the Premier League in 2028, well, that's a strange start to the plan, isn't it? By keeping Ten Hag in place.
If they are being patient, then if you are a Manchester United fan who wants Eric Ten Hag out, you would be hoping that Berarda, Ashworth, Wilcox and the rest of them are taking this time to research who they might want.
Yeah, and I also think that Man United could probably get any manager they wanted. I think looking at it, I think
Pep might be a stretch.
No, but obviously Pep, yeah. But I just mean in terms of the stature of the football club, the size, who wouldn't want to manage Manchester United? You know what I mean?
Arteta.
Arteta. We go for a load here, couldn't we?
Slot.
But I just mean in terms of who they'd be looking for.
Klopp.
Who they'd be looking for. There's loads who'd want to take that job. And listening to Rory before about players that wouldn't know if he's going to be in charge a week time, 2 weeks time, 3 weeks. As players, you've got to let that go. You've got to do your job. I really think that as a player, you've got to do your job as a player. I think it's hard not to think like that, but you've got to go in every day doing right by that football club and doing your best for that football club. It's as simple as that.
mnc@bbc.co.uk if you want to get in touch with us. 85058 on the text. At 5livesport if you want to get in touch with us on social media. Tottenham centre-halves. Connor, Phil Jones did the analysis on them last night on Match of the Day 2, and they stepped in and they win the ball and they go on 80-yard runs and they were imperious. You know, when they step in and don't quite get it right, as I mentioned last night at Newcastle, they then get caught out and they end up losing. But when they get it right and they're on form, they are an elite partnership, aren't they?
Incredible. Incredible. I love watching them. I love what they do. I love how aggressive they are. I love how on the front foot they are. I love the way they want to go forward and start the play and control the game from the back. I love the way they want to play. And I think they've been fantastic. And they'll only get better, the pair of them. But I think it's this kind of new breed of centre-back a little bit. And I go back to when Van Dijk first come to Liverpool. And he was kind of somebody who really set the tone for it. And then I think Saliba at Arsenal, and you look at Gabriel who plays with him, the partnership that they have together, and then Van de Ven on the weekend when he goes on the run and obviously squares it for Brennan Johnson is incredible. But if you just look at, we're going to go on to obviously Brighton defending, I think at one point, and how high they are and the pace that man's got, I think is incredible to get back. But just his aggression to want to step in and play on the front foot, I think it's brilliant. And I think for the Premier League and the way it's going, I just think it's another added force that you bring to the Premier League.
I mean,
doing 80 yard runs, can't it?
I'll have to get someone next to me who can do it.
as much as that run to set up the goal was impressive, I mean, there were numerous other moments for Van de Ven where you saw his pace, Chris, and he may have given Garnacho 15 yards and caught him up to clear the ball.
He's one of the quickest defenders I can think of. But that's where Postecoglou said many times on it that his best two players have to be his centre halves, and they have to be mobile. That's why he got rid of Eric Dier, and boy can Van de Ven run. I thought the pass as well. You know, when you're running at that speed, the accuracy of the pass to Brennan Johnson. I mean, even I would have scored that. It was, you know, it was brilliant how fast he was running. But no, they have to be able to handle 1v1 situations. And it's, as I say, a consequence of what Postecoglou demands. He demands that they play. They have to have absolutely everything. And on their day, I mean, they are sensational to watch, and how aggressive they are with the press. I mean, you know, they're happy to follow centre forwards and all forwards and all the way, all the way forward. To the edge of the D, the edge of the box. I mean, it's incredible the way that that he's got them playing. But then other weeks on here, Rory, set plays, we have been critical of Tottenham, haven't we? So when it works, it works superbly well. But when it doesn't, people are sort of ripping them to shreds. But I know which team I would rather watch out of Tottenham and Manchester United.
Can I just say as well, in terms of the way they both play, I think that gives, when we're speaking before about Manchester United and other clubs playing with fullbacks inside and different things, we mentioned Tottenham, I think that gives them the license just to play with them two at the back because of how quick he is. Because if they lose the ball, they don't need the cover from the fullback. So you see a lot of teams now playing with one fullback inside. They do two, and they build up with two at the back, and a lot of teams now build up with three at the back and two midfield, all this sort of thing. That the detail you can go into is incredible, but I think he gives them the license to be able to build up just with two at the back. He could go man for man at the back if he wanted, because the pace he's got to run back and look after his teammates is absolutely incredible. So I think the way Tottenham have done it and recruited that profile of player has been fantastic, because he's gave them so many options to play forward as well.
It's interesting you say that, because he was injured for that Newcastle game.
Mm.
So it's Dragosin who was alongside him.
Yeah, and he leaves a massive hole if he doesn't play, because they build the team around playing that way. So they're up on the halfway line. We can go back to the game last year when they played Chelsea, that absolute madness game where I think they were down to nine men, weren't they? And he was still on the halfway line. But to play that way, you need a profiler player like Van de Ven. And when he plays, you can see what they want to do and how they want to play. And he just gives the license for the team to play in that way that they do with fullbacks going forward.
I think it's fascinating, the centre-back debate, you know, and we talked about Saliba and Gabriel being the best partnership in the Premier League. I'm not going to argue with that, but they always have a full-back or both full-backs next to them, where actually, I mean, you'll probably laugh me out of town here. You know, when you look at Ramiro and Van de Ven and the way that they are under pressure every game they play in as a consequence of the style that Tottenham play. You know, there's a strong argument, and Postecoglou has faith that they have the lot. They're quick. They're aggressive. They're good in 1v1 situations. That, you know, those two, they're, you know, probably under more pressure than any other partnership in the Premier League. And they'd have to be up. You'd have to be talking about them, as one of the best, partnerships in the Premier League because of the way Tottenham play and the pressure they're under.
I think that's a valid point. I suppose Romero's rashness, occasional rashness, might count against them. Was it not, this might be me remembering things wrong, was it not the case that Spurs started really well under Postecoglou and that the sort of, not collapse in form, but the demise in form might have coincided with Mickey van der Ven being absent for about 2 months with a hamstring injury?
Yeah.
Which sort of lays bare Connor's point. I think that for the way Postecoglou wants to play, you probably need a lightning quick central defender to make it work.
Is he Tottenham's most important player then, Chris? I realise that's it's a question that is just set up to get a social media clip. I realise that, but
all right, I'll say yes then.
But it does it. When Connor talks about how they play and fullbacks inside and how high they can be because of his pace, if they lose him, is that worse than them losing Son or Kulusevski?
Yeah, Son was a big blow, Tottenham missing him. But I actually think that they are equal, Romero and Van de Ven, in terms of, all right, Van de Ven's probably a bit quicker, but I mean, you wouldn't want to go up against Romero. He's super aggressive, isn't he? You know, he's an absolute animal at times. You know, the way that he uses his body and you know, attacks the ball. I think he's phenomenal. And, you know, he's mobile enough. It's just Van de Ven is just so quick, isn't he? And that's why, you know, that's why Postecoglou picked him, and he can handle the ball. They can both handle the ball.
That for me is, I love hearing centre backs are the most important players in the team. One, because I'm a centre back. I love watching good centre backs. I love it when we see different types of centre backs come to the Premier League. So I completely agree. I think Son's a phenomenal player. Of course he is. He's super important to Tottenham. But I go back to my point before about the whole way they play. And especially again, I look at Romero next to him again. I think he's a fantastic player, but I don't think he can be as aggressive as he can be if he never had him next to him. I really don't believe that.
I'm going to move on from Tottenham, but as you said, the centre-backs are the most important to a team. Is a Colwell, Fofana and Badiashile more important to Chelsea than Cole Palmer?
Oh, no. Cole Palmer's top, isn't he? We were about Tottenham, weren't we?
Yeah. But I'm just, because you were just eulogising about centre-halves. We're going to talk Cole Palmer now, so I just thought I'd move it on that way.
Well, exactly, because we don't speak about it too much with other teams, so when we can get onto Tottenham and speak about the top centre-half, we will do, do you know what I mean?
Enzo Maresca says he's the best player in the league at the moment, so for another social media clip, would you agree, Rory?
Maybe. I don't know. He's a ridiculous footballer, Cole Palmer. Whether it depends what you want them to do. Is he a better centre half than Mickey van der Ven? No. But he has been central to Chelsea. Maresca's done a wonderful job to get a tune out of those various kind of discordant parts that he was presented with at Chelsea, and given the circumstances that he started his Premier League managerial career in. The way they're playing is an incredible achievement for Enzo Maresca. That speaks volumes of him. But Palmer is something else. He's a kind of proper virtuoso in a way that English football does have a history of, doesn't always talk about very much. But I thought was being slowly ground out of the game by the importance of the system. But Palmer is... That's a team built around Cole Palmer, and that's actually that actually.
He's a free spirit, is he?
Yeah, and like we were talking about like different ideas of how to play and different identities. There's not many who you'd say, well, actually, their identity is they've got an amazing number 10. But for a long time in football, that was a perfectly legitimate identity to have, that you were a team that worked around your incredible number 10. And that's kind of what Chelsea are, without wanting to kind of diminish what Maresca's done, because Palmer is that good.
I think for me, when Enzo first went there and listened to what he'd done with us last year, and I think Cole Palmer played a lot off the right last year, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Straight away when Enzo went there, we said, kind of at Leicester, he'll bring Cole Palmer into the middle and centre that team around him a little bit. Just because, and he is a free spirit, Cole Palmer, of course, he's the way he plays in different things, but what I think Enzo will do with him, he'll make him kind of play in position. He will have a position that will be his position, but he will get the best out of him in that position because he will know how good Cole Palmer is, for one, and I just think he'll make him better as a manager. I think he will make him better.
So he's a free spirit within a structure?
Yeah, 100%. There's always a structure to it. It won't be you go and play wherever you want. It will be the structure of, again, we go back to a boxing midfield a lot of teams are doing now. Enzo's certainly done that with us. I can see him doing that with Chelsea as well with the games that I've seen. And he will bring Cole Palmer into a number 10 position where he will always be on the half turn to receive the ball. Back in them lines that we were talking about when we were talking about Tottenham, Man United, firing balls through the line. He will be receiving in them areas to then attack goal or play little passes or the best of the best, he's scoring goals, and that's what he seems to be doing at the minute.
Since the 2nd of September of 2023, Chris, he's got 15 assists, which is more than anybody else, and 28 goals, which is just 6 fewer than Haaland.
Yeah, he's a phenomenal goal scorer, but what I really like about him more than any other player, and I'll include Haaland in this, and he's a totally different player to Haaland. That, you know, that whole debate, would you take Haaland, you know, for his goal scoring alone. But Palmer has so much more to his game, and I've rarely seen him waste a pass. He knows exactly when to pass. He's one of those players, he doesn't give you the ball when he's finished with it. He has wonderful awareness whether to play first time over the back of a defence, whether to take the ball in and slide a pass. You think about the link up with Madueke at Wolves, where Madueke scored four goals. But he's a wonderful mover. I know Theo Walcott likened him to Dennis Bergkamp, and I was thinking, well, who would you liken him to? I don't think it's Dennis Bergkamp. And I was thinking, because he's a lefty, would he be like a Chris Waddle? But he's slightly different to Chris. Chris was more of a stop-start dribbler. He was a dribbler, wonderful talent he was. But I think he's unique, Cole Palmer, the
Do
way
you?
that he plays. Well, I was racking my brains out today to try and think of a, I mean, you know, we've all seen football for a number of years now. Who would you liken him to, though? He's just... You know, he scores goals, he can dribble, but it's just his ability to see a pass. He sees things quick, so quickly, quicker than most. We're talking about top-level football, and his ability to manoeuvre and play that pass, and his weight of pass as well. I mean, Connor will know, that weight of pass is so underestimated. It is. It's always perfect. The weight of pass allows other players to run on, to it first time.
You'll find the weight of pass is quite important in pub football as well, Chris, actually.
Yeah.
Right? It's not just Connor who understands the importance of the weight of pass.
Well, more weight in pub football than weight of pass.
Did you see his pass the other day over the top for Nicholas Jackson?
Yeah.
How
he's just the way he played that, how he seen it, to see that pass first and foremost, but to play it first time and just to... He basically flicked his foot at it. And to have the technique to do that, and listen, it's not a flick of the foot, it's a lot more technical than that. But the way he plays and how kind of off the cuff he is, I love his attitude to the game. I think his attitude to the game is incredible. I love his interviews. Not many people might like them, but I absolutely love his interviews. And he's just like a young lad playing football who loves playing football, scoring. He's a phenomenal finisher. And his attitude to the game, I think, is brilliant.
Maresca said, I know Cole from many years ago, had him for one entire season with the under-23s at Manchester City. The best thing he has is that in the way he is today, he was 3 or 4 years ago. Goals, assists, best player of the Premier League. This doesn't change who he is. He's a simple guy, a humble guy. And also, it vindicates his decision to go, doesn't it? You know, Rory? And that was a big discussion at the time.
Yeah, and it does... seem, I've got to admit, and you don't want to kind of harp on about it, it does seem really weird that Manchester City sold someone who might be the best player in the Premier League for, what, 40 million quid? Which obviously is a lot of money, but it's not a lot of money in modern football. That is strange that Guardiola clearly felt he wasn't going to play at City. Now, that might be because he wasn't willing to do what Connor says, you know, has suggested Maresca might be doing, which is trying to centre in the team around Cole Palmer. But it is slightly odd, and to be honest, at City, they should be thinking, maybe we made a bit of a mistake there. But it absolutely vindicates his confidence. The reason that they gave at the time was that Palmer felt he was ready to play and play regularly, and City didn't think they could give him that opportunity. And Cole Palmer has proved that he was very much ready to play and play regularly in the Premier League. That, I think, Cole Palmer was probably right on.
Well, yeah, and he didn't want to hang around. Which you have to applaud, because there are plenty, not thinking of anybody here at all, but there are plenty who will hang around.
100%. And we're not talking about kind of, so at this moment in time, Chelsea and underneath Manchester City, I think we all agree with that, but he's not gone to a smaller club, he's not gone to a club, he's gone to Chelsea Football Club, who are renowned for being a massive club. Obviously over the last few years, they've done things a little bit differently. But 100%, it's justified his decision to go. I also think from a Manchester City point of view and why they let him go, listen, I don't think they'd have ever sat there and gone, he's not going to be fantastic. Because I think we've showed with examples before leaving Manchester City, people who've come through at Manchester, they know what a good player is and what a good player isn't. They're that good. But I just think in terms of where Pep Guardiola probably was at the time, it's how do I get him into this team? How do I actually get him into it with the superstars they've got here? So fair play to Cole Palmer doing what he's done, and what he's doing now is absolutely brilliant. I think he's a joy to watch.
Chris, just in terms of who he reminds you of, this is the sort of thing that might be put on social media and get lots of people who were not born kind of in the year 2000 shouting at me. But is there a little bit of Letizia about him? Not the conspiracy theories, but the kind of the ability to score goals, the set pieces, the inventiveness and that sort of virtuosity.
Can I throw another name in? That this came from our producer, who said Angel Di Maria, but not the United version. Is it were his exact words?
I think Di Maria is wrong. I think Di Maria is wrong.
Yeah. He's just thrown his headphones off and will walk out.
I think he's a more athletic player than Letizier, isn't he? But I know what you mean in terms of his language. He's got that languid look about him, hasn't he? You know, everything is done so easily, and he has so much time. He's one of those players when I watch, I just think he sees the game differently to most players. That the fact that he does seem to just know that he has more time. He thinks quicker. And at that level, that's you know, an incredible thing to do.
I appreciate it's now a different England regime and it's no longer Southgate. But all of a sudden, if he's there in the 10 role as well, then whoever becomes permanent England manager has an awful lot of decisions to make.
An awful lot of decisions, but how exciting is that? Honestly, how exciting is that to see him?
Should he be the 10?
I think he should be one of them. I don't think you have to play with one 10 anymore. I think you can play with more 10s, and I think he should be one of them.
That's an annoyingly tactical, astute answer, isn't it?
No, I don't think you have to play with one 10. I think you see the game now. I think we have 2 and 3 10s. I think you can play with...
You'd leave Foden out there, would you, or Bellingham, or who are you leaving out there?
Are we going to get into this now? You've not prepped me for this, you know.
Chris has confused you with the 606 caller. Continue your tactically astute answer.
No, I don't. All I'm saying is I don't think you have to play with 110. I really don't. I think you can play with more 10s, and I think that was probably the argument that we all tend to have, that we wanted more attacking players in the team under Gareth Southgate. But I do think you can get him into the team. I think there's a way of doing it. Who we leave out, I don't know, Chris, to be honest with you. Right at this moment in time, I'd have to go back and have
depends
a little sit
on the
and think
opposition,
about it. Yeah, of course it does. But listen, I think you've got to find a way of getting players like him into our England team, whatever way that is.
Let's move it on. We will talk Brighton next, who Cole Palmer scored the 4 goals and Chelsea attacking wise were excellent. They had their own defensive issues at times. Brighton in the nicest possible way, Chris, were all over the place on Saturday afternoon. The Guardian wrote this: it helps if an opposition manager chooses to shoot a whaling harpoon through his own foot, which is basically what Fabian Hertzler did here, by playing, if not the stupidest high defensive line of all time, then perhaps the stupidest yet. Clearly, Hertzler is an ideologue with a set way of playing, even if that set way is designed to become an act of self-immolation.
Yeah.
Yes.
But the one thing which I found really strange, you know, we know why teams play a high line to, you know, condense the game. But at the point when an opposing player is shaping up, and Chelsea had cottoned on to the high line, but when they're shaping up, and, you know, I'd love to hear Connor's, Connor's view on this as well. When somebody's shaping up to hit the ball in behind, the Brighton defenders, or some of them, were still coming up. That is so high risk. You know, they're trying to play offside. I was always taught that when somebody's shaping up to clip a ball in behind, you start dropping. And it's as simple as that, really. And they were coming the other way. And I'm thinking, well, that's suicide, isn't it? That's kamikaze stuff. And I'm not going to criticize Hertzler as a coach, but that's decidedly odd. That's something which I think is a principle of play which all defenders are taught, and they're doing the opposite of that. Maybe it was just a bad afternoon, but I'd be slightly worried if I'm a Brighton fan and that's going to be the way that that my team defends all season.
Yeah, Chris is exactly right. And so from a young age, as being a defender, you get taught there's no pressure on the ball, you drop and you get ready to run back. That's a simple thing. And when you're playing a high line, you can speak about a high line, and we hear kind of managers come out these days and coaches, we want to be aggressive, we want to be up the pitch, we want to play a high line. But there's a time when you play a high line, if they've got pressure on the ball, you can squeeze up the pitch. That's quite obvious as a defender. what you're taught as a young lad is if there's no pressure on the ball or a player, like Chris has just said, is shaping to put a ball in behind you, you turn your body and your face, you go side on and you get ready to run back and you defend the space in behind. Now, there can be some confusion sometimes because people just say play a high line. But when is it right to play a high line? Is it right to play a high line when you're on the halfway line? Is a high line out of the box when the players... Do you know what I mean?
Interestingly, Connor, Hertzler made that point afterwards. He said it's not about the high line. Mm. It's about getting pressure on the ball. In some situations, we didn't manage to get pressure on the ball and that's why they could play easily behind our back four. After the game, it's easy to say, why don't you defend in a low block? But also in a low block, we could lose this game.
100%. And when you go up against teams like that, low blocks are always tough. But again, I go back to it. It's not necessarily, like Hertzler said there, it's not necessarily the high line that's the problem. Everybody wants to play a high line these days. Every single team will sit there and a coach will sit there and go, we want to squeeze the pitch because we want to win the ball higher up the pitch to have more chance of scoring in the opposition half. But there's got to be pressure on the ball. Now, we can turn around and say, as a defender, if there's no pressure on the ball, look after yourself and make sure you're ready to run back. Now, but if you're just hearing high line, we're going to play a high line every week, as a defender, you go, I need to get up the pitch. I need to get up 10 yards. I need to get up 5 yards, whatever it may be. And you're not ready, but that's where responsibilities come on the football pitch to know that there's no pressure on the ball and you've got to run back.
But to bring it kind of full circle to what we're talking about with Man United, the reason coaches do that, even when it seems a little bit sort of, kamikaze, as Chris says, is because it means that the players have got a clarity of idea, that they know that this is the way, this is what we do, this is where I'm meant to be, and my coach believes, rightly or wrongly, that more times than not, it will work to our benefit. Whereas when you start, and this is what managers always say about, why don't you just, when you can see that Chelsea are doing this, why don't you just drop 5 yards for 10 minutes? It's because that confuses everybody. And that means there is that sort of momentary doubt of, are we meant to be doing this now? Whereas from a coach's point of view, I think if you tell your players, this is what you do, and more often than not, it'll work for you, then at least they have that sort of sense of this is our purpose, rather than being caught between two stools. That, I think, is why they do it, even when it becomes clear that they probably shouldn't.
And also, Rory, every defender will tell you they want to defend in front of you. You want to defend what's in front of you. You want to step and you want to jump and you want to be aggressive, as we were talking about Romero before, and you want everything to... You don't want to be running back. So the idea of actually having a high line and defending in front of you and getting pressure on the ball is what you want as a defender, because running back is hard, especially against the strikers in this division. They're super fast. The timing of the runs are fantastic. So to run back is tough. So if you can get it right, it's the right way to go and it's the way people want to defend. But it's also understanding that when there's no pressure on the ball, you have to look after yourself as a defender and behind you.
They also, as well as the high line, I mean, they also made a right pig's ear of a couple of things on Saturday and contributed to their own downfall, trying to play out from the back or losing the ball and so on and so forth. This is a wider point, which we have discussed before, Connor, but the stats are interesting at the moment. This season, we are already at errors leading to shots, including goals, per game at 1.34, which is nearly double what it has been in the previous three seasons. Errors leading directly to goals, already 30 in 59 games that are played, which is 0.5 errors leading to goals per game, which again is 2.5 times what it was in 21-22, when you had the whole season, when it was 0.2 errors leading to goals per game.
There's a lot of stats in there.
A lot of numbers in that sentence, Shepherds.
Right. Yeah. Well, Connor's followed it.
Can you just say it again?
Well, I could do. Basically, there are more errors leading to shots and more errors leading to goals per game than the previous three seasons.
What's happened to the modern game, the modern player? Look, it's principles of play, isn't it? That's what it is. I mean, there's no manager out there who tells the players to pass the ball to the opposition. It's just the way that teams are drilled. And, we've spoken about Manchester United and they lacked belief to play out from the back and the players froze. But there are managers who are insistent on their team playing a particular way. And I think Brighton are one of those teams. So are Chelsea.
Will it change?
So Manchester City, so are Tottenham.
Well, at some point, will somebody go, you know what, this is getting a bit silly.
Do you want me to be completely honest? I think a lot of the reasons for them stats, I think teams are going man-to-man. I think a lot of teams now are going man-to-man, so it's harder to play. But when you watch Manchester City, so we're all building our play now, aren't we, around Manchester City. It's all playing out from the back. It's doing this. When teams go man-to-man against Manchester City, like Brentford did the other week, Ederson goes longer. And yeah. Haaland's 1v1 at the back. So Ederson's not scared to go longer. So that's something they work on. We worked on it last year and different things. But you go longer. As soon as you know a team are going man-to-man, you go longer. So teams now are going man-to-man, but teams still want to play out from the back, so you still want to bounce into midfield, to bounce out to a centre-back and then run out. But it's hard when you're man-to-man because there's no space, there's no overloads all over the pitch. So there's got to be a reason why. So I think that's a big reason. Will it change? I don't think it'll change. I don't think it'll change. I think managers stick to what they do. I think they try and get the best out of the players that they've got, and I'll be shocked if it was to change people's style of play when that's building from the back.
Would there ever be a situation, do you think, where a Premier League defender or back four or back three would go to Manchester, what, we're really struggling with this?
100%.
Right.
100%. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I wouldn't think it'd be we're struggling with this. I think it would be Gaffer getting found out a bit here. Like, we're getting caught too many times and this isn't right. And that's where decisions come on the pitch as well, by the way. Can you take 5 minutes every time there's a goal kick? Right, we need to relieve a little bit of pressure here because they're jumping on us. So can we go higher? Can we get a second ball? Can we play from the middle of the pitch rather than your own goal kick and do it that way? That's where responsibility comes on the pitch as well. But I don't think, going back to your question, Chappers, I don't think managers will change their identity and their way of playing just because a few players have been caught in possession.
It wouldn't be a good career move, would it, if you were sort of a back three and you went to the manager and said, no, we're useless at playing out in the back.
I wouldn't say it the way you say it, to be fair, Chris.
Yeah. Yeah, I meant it in an open discussion kind of
back line.
It obviously depends on the manager as well, doesn't it? The relationship you have with the manager. But I think managers, listen, we're not doing it for the sake of ourselves and saying, no, we can't do that. You're doing it for the sake of the team and going, listen, we're giving too many chances away here. Yeah. So we can still play out from the back. But again, I mentioned Manchester City. When teams go man-to-man, they just go Haaland. And listen, we've not all got a Haaland, but we can all go bigger.
They've always got the extra guy because they've got the goalkeeper. That's why goalkeepers, you know, there's all this pressure to, you know, for them to be brilliant with the feet. But it's just, it's a variation. It's back to, is our build-up play better than the opposition's press? And if teams are pressing high, Connor's, you know, pointed out Manchester City do it. But they're not the only ones. Mm. Who do it, but you've got to have variation. You don't want to be a one-trick pony, Mark. It's not pub football.
You're lucky to have any tricks in pub football. No matter, one-trick pony would be captain of a pub football team. The only thing I'd say is that is a sample of 6 games at the start of the season compared to a whole season.
And No, it's not. It's 59 games.
But was it? Yeah. It may well be that there's more mistakes in the early part of the season while teams are still bedding in than there are over the course of the season itself. So it might be that you see the numbers reduce. That's all.
There's a lot of mites in there.
Just saying. Just a little caveat.
Tell you what, there's a reason why he's the voice of sport, yeah, isn't there? Do you know what I mean? Fantastic.
To be fair, with Ilkley under sevens, I play a sweeper. I'm not having any of this nonsense. We play a sweeper at all times.
Is that an actual sweeper, or when your goalkeeper just goes wandering because they lose concentration?
No,
we've all been at.
It is an actual player who is instructed not